Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 29th of September. Our guest this hour is the president and CEO of Common Cause. Bob Edgar is with us. Common Cause, you're familiar with, is a national nonpartisan nonprofit citizens lobby that's working to make government at all levels more honest, more open, and accountable to connect citizens with their democracy. Bob served on the national governing board of Common Cause before becoming president. He was a member of Congress for 12 years, elected in 1974, representing the 7th Congressional District of Pennsylvania, which is outside Philadelphia, where he worked to improve public transportation, fighting wasteful water projects, and authoring the community right to know provision of the Superfund legislation. He also served on the House Select Committee on Assassinations that investigated the deaths of Martin Luther King Jr. and President John Kennedy. As president of Common Cause, Bob has been working on the public funding of political campaigns at all levels, at election reforms that make voting more accurate, more secure, and accessible, at improving ethics of all levels of government, and a diverse and open media. He has been president of the Claremont School of Theology, has a Master of Divinity degree, and is author of Middle Church, which is a call for progressive people of faith. And he is joining us in Madison, our studios in Madison. We'll be looking at a report last week. We'll talk about the financial crisis first. He also has some things to say about Alberto Gonzalez, and there was a report that was released today about him. So we'll get to that during the course of our conversation. But the report last week was, ask yourself why Congress didn't see the financial crisis coming, which is an important question for the beginning of this week. And we'll ask him that first as soon as we say hello. Bob Edgar?
Hello.
Hi. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's good to be with
yeah.
you.
So why didn't Congress see the financial crisis coming? It keeps getting worse every day.
Well, since I left Congress in the mid-'80s, money and politics has become more extensive, and many people in lobbying organizations, corporations, labor unions are flooding Congress with huge amounts of money. We did a study that we released last week and discovered tons of money that went into Freddie and Fannie Mac, money that went into the major banking institutions to deregulate the process so that they could put a lot of mortgages together with very little paperwork on behalf of the persons trying to find and borrow the money. And that has led to this financial crisis in the housing market, which has led to this economic meltdown on Wall Street. And it's interesting to me to listen to both Democrats and Republicans in Washington who worked really hard to deregulate the financial industry. And they did that because of the major contributions they were receiving, and now everyone's paying the price.
Mm-hmm. And who was receiving the money? It was a pretty much split, Bob, between Republicans and Democrats here. Are they both to blame?
They are both to blame. Democrats and Republicans shared in the largesse of not only the banking industry, but if you were to give a gold medal, a silver medal, and a bronze medal for the three lobbying groups that spent the most money last year, it was the realtors number one, beer distributors number two,
wow,
and home builders number three.
Hmm.
So, you know, I think if you go back, as we did, and research how much money went to reelecting Democratic and Republican House members over the course of the last 10 years, it equates to the deregulation of the banking and the financial industry. And that brings us to why Common Cause, an organization founded 38 years ago by John Gardner, is needed now more than ever. Our core mission and message is to get money out of politics. If we're going to address health care, we got to recognize that the medical industry has tons of money in the healthcare market and manipulated the senior drug bill that was passed a couple years ago. If we're going to deal with alternative energy, we got to recognize that state by state, region by region, the oil companies, the coal companies, and the current energy companies put a ton of money into the coffers of political candidates in all of the political parties. And We have in Maine, Connecticut, and Arizona public financing already installed. We're trying to move it city by city. We have it in Albuquerque and Portland. We're also trying to fix the presidential public financing system. Too much money from too many special interests is flowing into the political system and diverting attention from smart, good, rational, bipartisan responses to the issues that we face.
So let's bring this down to a couple of lenders. I think that your report looked at the story of the nation's two largest housing lenders, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, lobbying and campaign activities. How much money were they floating into legislators' coffers?
It's hard to give you a specific number. There are some numbers listed in our report. It's not only the executives giving legal contributions at the highest level, but those executives were bundling money in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So in some cases, it's very difficult to trace the total volume, but it's millions and millions and millions of dollars getting into the political process so that, and let's just be clear, lobbyists are not bad. Lobbyists are good people. The problem is when they come to the table with so much money invested in the candidates, it gives them direct access. I talked to a lobbyist in Colorado recently who works with Common Cause, and he said, when I give the Speaker of the House of Representatives in Colorado a contribution and bundle money on behalf of our particular interest, I expect that the secretary at the outer gate who sets the schedule takes my call, schedules me, and gives me access. And that's what they're buying.
Well, it's hard to call them good people then, isn't it?
Well, I think the system is bad, and the system makes good people bad. And I think if we can systematize lowering the amount of money in the system, we can get public officials who serve the public interest and not the special interest. And it has when I ran for the United States Senate back in 1986, taking legal contributions, Arlen Specter, the senator from Pennsylvania who I ran against, he raised $6 million. I raised $4 million. 2 years ago, when that Senate race was up in Pennsylvania, the two candidates, Santorum and Casey, who won the election, they spent $37 million for that Senate seat. So it's just exponentially increased over time.
Yeah. And going back to the Freddie and Fannie, does this lead somehow, these campaign contributions, to predatory lending? If you deregulate it enough, they want to make sure that they're giving loans to people because they think they're going to make more money. And then so they're enticing people who probably shouldn't be getting loans.
That's correct. Back in the 90s, under even the Clinton administration, there was enough political money spent that they devalued something called the Sterling Act, and that was part of the beginning of the loosening of regulation. And we really have to go back and put in place reasonable and rational regulations. You know, capitalism is a good economic system, but it doesn't work in all settings unless there are rules and regulations that control the flow of money. And in the case of campaign contributions and lobbying contributions, and in the case of lessening the regulations on the banking and lending industry, we're paying that price now. Mm-hmm. And I hope that this scandal, this crisis, generates passion on the part of Democrats and Republicans to fix the system, to lower and get money out of the political process so that rational decisions can be made on public policy moving forward.
And tell me, because I think, Bob, a lot of us are confused about what all of this is going to mean for those of us who are average Americans. What will it mean, all the events of this week? What does this $700 billion bailout mean in terms of transforming a system, but also in terms of taxpayers?
Well, let's begin by saying you can't have a war in Iraq and a war in Afghanistan, the large tax cuts that have been given, and have no way of paying for it. Up until the first day of the current administration in Washington, from George Washington to George Bush, the the debt was about $4.5 trillion. 8 years later, that debt exceeds $11 trillion. And our children and grandchildren are going to be paying off that debt for probably 100 years. So that's one impact. The second impact is whoever gets elected on November 4th, whether it's John McCain or Barack Obama, because of the actions of the defense spending and the tax cuts, piled on top this $700 billion bailout package, there's going to be little or no financial resources available to do some of the very urgent things we need. We still have 9 million of our children who have no health care. Mm-hmm. 45, 6, 7, or 8 million Americans are outside the health care system. Everybody, doctors, hospitals, medical people, and consumers believe we've got to fix the health care crisis in the United States. It's going to be harder to make that case given the fact that all of this expenditure of funds is taking the oxygen out of any resources available to do the good things that we need. Think about global warming and an alternative energy policy. It's going to take resources to do that. And my fear is that if we don't get the economic issues straight and find a way to balance all of the expenditures that we're making, we're going to be a long time addressing issues that should have been addressed 10 years ago.
Right. And some of them are quite crucial, as you just said. They're very crucial.
Yeah. I met Dr. Martin Luther King just weeks before he was assassinated.
Oh.
And Dr. King, I later interviewed James Earl Ray, so I've met the dreamer and talked with the assassin. I like the dreamer better. But Dr. King had an amazing way of analyzing the impact of war, in that case, the Vietnam War, and poverty that was rampant in the 60s. And he said this: "We're now faced with the fact that tomorrow is today. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, there is such a thing as being too late. Procrastination is still the thief of time." He goes on and ends that passage by saying, "We still have a choice today, nonviolent coexistence or violent co-annihilation. This may well be humankind's last chance to choose between chaos and community." Common Cause is committed to building community, and that's why we want to lessen the impact of money in politics. We want to diversify the media. We want to have a commission look into the abuse of power that we've seen in both Democratic and Republican administrations. We want to rebalance the three branches of government so that the Constitution is adhered to. And we really want to work hard on ethics and lobbying reform. And here in Wisconsin, you do a better job than most states, and you're getting the election process straight better than some states. But there's still work to be done. Last night, I was here in Madison honoring a Democrat and Republican, former Governor Tony Earl, and major Republican executive leader by the name of Bill Krause, who served on the Common Cause Board. A Democrat and a Republican, both who have a reputation of collaboration and working together. And I think at this time in history, the wave that Obama's riding, the wave that McCain is riding, was not created by them. It was created by average, ordinary people who want Democrats and Republicans to do what we used to do, and that is work together.
It must make you mad as heck, though, Bob, that we've been on this issue and we see the results of it, and we're seeing it in such a dramatic fashion right now that we don't even know what the fallout will be from it, and we don't change the system in some substantial way, and it obviously needs to be changed, or we wind up with this.
Right. And my hope is that the tragedy of the stock market crash of last week and the bailout package that is being put together will wake up all Americans across the board to saying we've got to fix the system of government. And we've got to get Democrats and Republicans elected who, once elected, put aside their partisan hats and serve the public interest, not the special interest.
Mm-hmm. Tell me just briefly before we go to phone calls on the bailout about serving on the House Select Committee on Assassinations. You investigated Right after you met him, unfortunately, the death of Martin Luther King and also on President John Kennedy. Those must have been hard to sit through.
It was very hard. This was the investigation that took place in 1977-78 after the Warren Commission. We analyzed as much as we could of the evidence that was there. If there was a conspiracy in the King case, I think the conspiracy was that James Earl Ray was helped by his brothers, and they never were brought to trial. His whole family were bank robbers. As many people will remember, James Earl Ray was helped to break out of the Missouri State Penitentiary 1 year before he assassinated Dr. King. And he and his brothers robbed banks for the year. And I think they, while they were racist, they were more interested in the $50,000 reward on Dr. King's head. And our committee did a lot of work in researching white supremacists that were after Dr. King. And here we are in 2008, and racism is still a major problem that we face here in our country. My hope is that this presidential election will not only expose that, but heal some of that racist tension so that we can get beyond race. On the Kennedy case, I happen to agree with Arlen Specter, who was the special prosecutor or special counsel to the Warren Commission, who helped to invent the single bullet theory. As crazy as it sounds, I think that's exactly right. I saw no evidence of any shots from the front or the grassy knoll. And I believe that Oswald was the shooter. If there was any conspiracy, and I don't think we'll ever get to the bottom of it, is the question of whether there was a relationship between Oswald and Ruby. But that's for future people to try to investigate. I think, unfortunately, there'll be open questions forever.
We're going to welcome phone calls for you in just a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, or send an email, talk@WPR.org. Before we go to phone calls, Bob, hey, you can start with Wisconsin. You've already mentioned some of this. How prepared are we to have all of the voting machines very high level, going to work just fine, no long lines, no people saying they ought to be on the polls and they're not listed on the polls? Is everything okay for this election?
Well, actually, if you compare Wisconsin with the rest of the country, you're better off than all the other states.
We found
that Wisconsin has been a little bit smarter in its processes and is less tempted to manipulate this election. There still are concerns. One concern is that students who register at their colleges have an opportunity to vote near their colleges and not have some strange ID provision installed. We want to make sure that the Secretary of State provides adequate voting machines and alternatives if people are questioned at the polls. But generally, Wisconsin gets a fairly good grade for its work. We are worried about Florida and Pennsylvania and Ohio. We're worried about New Mexico. We're worried about some of the battleground states that have done a lot to suppress voting. And, you know, this is an important election, probably the most important presidential election in my lifetime. A lot of young people are energized. Persons of color are energized. Women are energized. Average ordinary citizens and all the political parties are energized. And I think a fundamental constitutional idea is that when you go to vote, your vote should count.
Right.
And we've seen in recent years with some of the challenges in Ohio and Florida that many people's vote doesn't count, or the machines break down and can't be recounted or audited. So we're working in the month of October with a whole coalition of organizations. Common Cause has just received a nice grant to work in the battleground states to make sure that whatever we can do to inform the public as to what their rights are and to provide clarity for people to go to the polls and vote. I think you know that there are tricks that both parties have played over time. We found a couple years ago flyers that went out and said because of the massive amount of voting, Republicans vote on Tuesday and Democrats vote on Wednesday.
Oh my.
That was one of the issues. Or in minority areas, whether they're African American or Hispanic, flyers go out and say if you have a traffic ticket or any kind of violation, if you go to the polls, you'll be arrested to try to suppress the vote. And there are some areas of the country where those scare tactics are still employed, and we want to expose them. Some of the states have strong laws to prevent deceptive practices. Others have very loose rules and regulations. We want to monitor this election and ask good government organizations across the country that we work with to monitor polling places, also monitor opportunities for deceptive practices to take place. We're setting up hotlines so that any kinds of violations can be reported. And hopefully November 5th, we'll clearly know who the next president is and who the House and Senate folks are who are going to lead us out of the quagmire that we're in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sure hope Florida and Ohio get it right. They've had time to straighten up their act, don't you think?
They do. One interesting thing in Ohio that you'll be interested in, Secretary of State in Ohio, who's new, and the Secretary of State in California, who is new, each of them received from the Kennedy Library in Massachusetts the Profiles in Courage Award this year for their work in cleaning up the election process. Mm. And I thought that was a really remarkable honor for at least Ohio that had such a terrible reputation. And what these two secretaries of state did, they decertified machines that could be hacked into, and they refused to allow voting machines that did not have the ability for a recount or a paper trail to be used in election processes. If you have a good Secretary of State or election official who really cares, it gives you a great deal of confidence that we'll get it straight in 2008.
Phone calls for our guest in a moment. Bob Edgar is president and CEO of Common Cause. He was a member of Congress for 12 years, elected in 1974, representing the 7th Congressional District of Pennsylvania outside Philadelphia. We're talking about the financial bailout, the number of contributions from the housing industry from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And also we're looking at making sure that the polls are going to be having machines that work very well and that there aren't long lines and that we can have a fair, honest, decent election coming up pretty soon now. To your calls in a moment, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, or send an email if you'd like. You can do that. That's talk@WPR.org. Frank from Madison, our first caller. Hi, Frank.
Thank you for your fine guest. I have a 1.5 questions for him. The first is the result, the immediate result of the bailout and the current financial crisis, that we're going to have only large financial institutions that are operating with either an implicit or explicit state guarantee? In other words, are the institutions that have got us into this trouble going to be the ones who are going to be fail-safe in the future? And then the second, or one half, is what happened to the idea of breaking up combines which engage in abusive practices in the marketplace? Surely they should have been shut down, their books audited, and new institutions, smaller institutions, put in their place. So thank you.
Thanks, Frank.
Thanks, Frank, for your questions. Before I answer your specific questions, let me just say two things about Wisconsin. You guys have the second highest voter turnout in the nation. It's something you should be proud of. Minnesota is first. And your same-day voter registration here in Wisconsin is a model, that a good virus that we'd like to spread across the country. Frank, your specific questions are really important. I think the honest answer is that there's going to be a ripple effect to this tragic financial crisis that could have been avoided. I think the big problem is that capitalism is the last economic system standing. And there's almost a new McCarthyism that existed for the last 20 years, that anybody who critiqued capitalism was somehow a bad person. But I think even those strong supporters of capitalism realizes that capitalism doesn't fix every issue, and there needs to be balance and regulation. And both Democrats and Republicans in the 1990s and in this decade have come to Washington and have been willing, because of the housing market's increase, not decline, but increase, and the ability to flood the housing market and get people into home ownership, they turned a blind eye to regulation, reduced it, eliminated it, made it easier for people who could not afford mortgages, or put together these balloon mortgages where, after a period of time, the interest rates just skyrocketed and put a lot of people in jeopardy, and that's why you see so much foreclosure now. I'm afraid that even with the bailout that's probably going to pass the House and Senate now, we're looking at several years of recovery. These economic trends don't turn around overnight. I think it will help the marketplace, but I think there are some smaller institutions that could, in fact, be in trouble. I think there'll be some mergers and some collaborations. I think it is important for both political parties to keep an eye on this process. I'd hate to think that some of the same institutional leaders who got us into the practice are going to be in charge of how we get out of this economic crisis. But a good first step is the fact that this weekend, for the first time in probably 15 years, Democrats and Republicans were forced to work together. My hope is that on November 5th, after the very heated partisan election, people will begin to put pressure on their elected officials to stay bipartisan, nonpartisan, and a new word, transpartisan, as we begin to make adjustments. What you'll see in the package that's going to pass this week is a short-term fix, but the long-term effort is to really review all of our regulatory authority and put reasonable regulations in place so that this doesn't happen again in the future. And that's going to take courage. It's going to take collaboration of the two parties. In terms of breaking up the combines, again, it's all part of this process. We've allowed ourselves to think that everything that the private sector does can be done without oversight and control, and that's just not possible.
You know, the other thing that I don't think we pay enough attention to, Bob, is the number of people who are really hurting in this country, who are losing their homes at record numbers, people who don't have places to go. It's just, I don't think we pay enough attention to that. While you got these other fat cats walking away with $30 million severance pays, I'm sorry, there's something fundamentally unfair about all of this.
I think all of these executives who walk away from institutions should get the same severance pay that a teacher gets when they have to step aside from being a teacher. I think these multi-million dollar severance packages are not only outrageous, they are a bad symbol of how we operate in the marketplace.
Right.
And I just am appalled. And some of them take these resources. As one guy who just was head of one of these institutions for 3 weeks, and he's taking away a huge severance package
of
many millions of dollars, and that's just got to stop.
Right. Frank, thanks very much for your always intelligent questions. Vicki from Duluth, hi.
Hi. I have a question about campaign finance, and it's about the donating of money. And it's always defended as a speech issue, but seems to me when you donate money to a candidate or to a party, it's much more like casting a vote than it is like speaking. I can see how spending the money is speech when you buy an ad. So what I'd like to see is a lawsuit that goes all the way to the Supreme Court, where we say that as an individual voter, say, for example, me, that I've been harmed by contributions way out of my range, and that we should have contributions only coming from registered voters and in a small enough amount so that even the poorest people could come up with it if it meant something to them.
Vicki, that's a great idea. I think the Supreme Court's decision recently that said that money is speech and that our founding fathers intended money to be speech are absolutely wrong. I think money can stifle speech, and Common Cause has worked very hard to lessen the impact of money. Let me just give you a couple examples of what could happen if we were smart. In Arizona, the current governor ran on a voluntary public financing system. She had to raise 2,000 $5 bills to qualify for public financing. She said to me that it was the first time she ever had a fundraiser in a poor neighborhood because she could only accept $5. Once elected, she was not controlled by the energy companies, the insurance companies, the real estate companies, the home builders. She could work with their legislature and act with her good judgment as opposed to acting on behalf of special interest. In Maine, the Speaker of the State House of Representatives in Maine is a 31-year-old blonde woman who would not have had a chance to run for public office if, in fact, they didn't have public financing in place. In Connecticut this year, because of the corruption of a previous governor who went to jail, we got the legislature to pass public financing, and 80% of those running for the State House of Representatives in Connecticut have voluntarily opted into this system, and I think we'll see positive examples of how it's working. In the city of Albuquerque, they went ahead and installed public financing locally, and what they discovered was that several community activists are now sitting on city council. Your specific question about a Supreme Court or a lawsuit that would go all the way up to the Supreme Court, I think two things. One is, yes, that's a good idea, and yes, Common Cause and other good government groups would support it. We'd also like to see some of the Supreme Court current members and future members really go back and take a second look at this idea that the founding fathers and mothers thought that money was speech. Money can be a part of speech, but it also can be a megaphone that stifles speech.
Thank you, Vicki, very much for your call. Scott is next from the Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you so much for doing this program. I'm one of those who has long believed that having the best Congress money can buy is at the root of so many, many of our problems and why things don't get done. And on Wisconsin Public Radio a while back, they had a guest on this topic. I called in, and I asked, why is it, and I use the example of Warren Rudman as a specific individual, all these people who were in the Congress get out of Congress and suddenly are decrying how corrupt it is and all the problems that money and the lobbyists and the congresspeople who finish up their terms and then become lobbyists or sometimes quit in the middle of their terms, like Billy Tozan down in Louisiana, to go to work as million-dollar lobbyists after they pass corrupt legislation. I said, you know, why is it that the good folks who are, when they're there, don't do something and wait until they're gone before they start speaking out? And I don't want to sound like a voice of doom here, but his response was, you know, what's happened is it used to be that people would go to Washington and get corrupted. Now people are going to Washington because they're venal, because they are corrupt, and they're going to get theirs, so that the very people that we would need to rely on to drain the cesspool have come there because it is a cesspool. Now, Kathleen, I just hope your guest here is going to tell me that I'm just 100% wrong.
You're not wrong, but the system doesn't have to be that way. I got elected at age 31 to the United States House of Representatives 1 year after looking the word Democratic up in the telephone book. I was chaplain at Drexel University, a United Methodist preacher. I had founded a shelter for homeless women in the city of Philadelphia. And the day that Archibald Cox was fired by Richard Nixon, I looked the word Democratic up in the telephone book and won an election in the most Republican district in the nation to have a Democratic congressman. And I showed up in Washington at age 31 with the Watergate baby class. And in that class were people like Paul Simon of Illinois, Paul Tsongas of Massachusetts, and a host of people who were not tied to the old boy system or the political process. I think that the caller is accurate that there are a number of elected officials who go to Washington. I'm not sure that they go as corrupt as you talk about, but if I were to be honest with you, if I had stayed longer, the corruption of Bob Edgar would have occurred by my friends, not my enemies. My enemies were out trying to get me defeated, but my friends were trying to hold my feet to the fire to the 10, 12 issues that they wanted me to vote for. Let me give you an illustration. In March of 77, I voted against something that organized labor wanted, particularly the building and construction trades unions. It was called common situs picketing. It was to give labor unions the ability to picket at all the gates of a construction site. And I thought that it was not a good idea. We needed jobs, not this particular bill. I was one of 12 people that they expected to vote for them who voted against them. Many years later, when I ran for the United States Senate, even though I had an 85%, 90% voting record on most labor issues, they opposed me because I was their friend who had betrayed them. Mm. And those people in Washington who want to stay there for life tend to shape their voting record, and even the good ones shape their voting record so they know how to get 50%+ of the voters to support them so that they can keep their profession. I happen to believe in term limits. This is not a common cause issue per se, but I think term limits ought to recycle House and Senate members periodically. I'd give House members four-year terms and limit them to three terms or 12 years. I'd give senators a six-year term, limit them to 18 years, and recycle them whether they need it or not, because I think we need a system where people are representing. You mentioned Billy Tozen. Billy Tozen walked away with a $2 million annual salary from the very pharmaceutical companies who gave him the pharmaceutical bill that was supposed to help senior citizens, that they got many billions of dollars of profit from. He got it passed. The president signed it. He walked out the door and made a great deal of money. That's got to stop. Common Cause worked last year to put a two-year moratorium on elected officials in Washington being able to go and work at lobbyist firms. We need to strengthen and tighten those rules moving forward.
Anything else, Scott?
No, Kathleen, thank you for having this guest, and good luck, sir. I'm rooting for you all the way. Appreciate
it. Take a look at our website, which is www.commoncause.org. That can help you see some of the issues that we deal with at Common Cause. And also, for your listeners, they can dial up 1-866-OUR-VOTE, and that's active now, and that can help them with any questions they have about the election process here in Wisconsin.
Oh, great. 1-866-OUR-VOTE.
That's correct.
All right, thanks. More phone calls for Bob in a moment. Bob Edgar is our guest, president of Common Cause, our phone number, and we have two lines open. It's rare here, so take them, 800-486-8655 or you can use the email, which is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655. You probably haven't had a chance to see this, and we're just getting initial reports from the government on Alberto Gonzalez in the Justice Department. I know that you had called for his resignation some time ago. Have you been briefed at all on what today's report says, Bob?
I know some of it. I not only called for his resignation, I called for his impeachment.
Wow. Why?
I think fundamental to the Justice Department in this United States of America, it should be a principle that it's justice for all and not just justice for some. He violated that by politicizing the process of special prosecutors and attorney generals. And I just think that it's a violation of the Constitution. I hope that whoever gets elected the next president will select an attorney general who recognizes they're not the president's lawyer, they're the nation's lawyer. And I think Alberto Gonzalez violated that on several occasions, and I think he discredited the whole Justice Department system and should have left office sooner than he did, and if he didn't voluntarily resign, he should have been impeached.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Scott from Onalaska. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you today, Kathleen?
Fine, Scott. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I don't know if it's a little bit off topic here or not, but I guess in less than an hour or something, we're going to have another vote on our bailout. And I just kind of hoping that the chips are going to fall the way they are. I think that, you know, if there was a issues with who was, you know, if the big problem with the country is, for instance, the real estate and the okay for financing people who were questionable with financing, were granted financing. There was boards that reviewed and looked over, situations where maybe people weren't given the proper information. I know when I sign on the line, I know what I'm signing. I think we should let the chips fall and see where this all ends up without this big bailout. We don't have enough information to see if this is even going to work. And I guess I'll take my comments off the air.
All right, Scott. Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, this is a tough question. I don't think any of us know whether it's going to work. We do know that partisanship has been put aside. The White House, the House and Senate, the Republicans and Democrats are under clear understanding that if they don't get it right, they'll pay the price not only at the ballot box but also over time. My hope is that they are getting it right. It's good that both presidential candidates are in concert, even reluctantly, to move forward. But this is not an area of expertise that I have watched in detail, except to release our report on how much money the leaders of these financial institutions have, in fact, spent over time to buy off members of the House and Senate. And we're going to do some more work in studying the role of money in determining public policy, not just in the financial markets, but in the healthcare industry and in the energy industry, because it's been clear for many years that public servants have not been active and acting in the public's interest. They've been acting often in the special interest, and that's just got to change. Let me just go back to Alberto Gonzalez for a moment.
Sure, Bob.
Why don't you say a word about what the is breaking right now as a breaking story? You have it in front of you there, I think.
No, I don't. No, it was okay. It was a brief clip on the news. We'll have Rhonda try and track that down if she has time.
Well,
but it was a very lengthy report about it, and I just heard a glimpse of it. I thought maybe you had seen it too because I knew you were involved.
Yeah.
So we're suffering from lack of information here, but she'll She's going to get us up to date on it.
There's a lot that's coming out, a number of books being written about his role even before he became the Attorney General, and I think it's important for people to know the truth, but also it's important for the next administration to know what happened that caused some of the inequities and abuse of power that we've seen in this current administration.
Yeah. Let's go next to Rosemary. Hi, Rosemary.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. I was calling to see if this the chap that was on this board for, 9 or 10 days and then walked away with several million dollars, has that actually happened yet? And if it hasn't, can it be stopped?
In this bailout package, there are rules and regulations, and it, in fact, can be altered and stopped because the money hasn't gone yet.
But, because I was thinking that if this had happened, if he did have this money, that he should be made to wear a sandwich board. And on this board, it should say, I am a greedy fat cat. And then he should be made to walk up and down the street. And frankly, I think that should happen to a lot of these CEOs. They know, they have to know that what they're doing is greedy and it's wrong.
As opposed to the bracelets that criminals wear on their ankles, you could have a scarlet letter that they would wear around that may be the size of a sandwich board. You've got an interesting idea. I think we need transparency. I think we need to expose these folks who have just abused the system. And I think those of us who live in a capitalist system need to realize that capitalism is a good thing, but it needs to be modified. It needs to be critiqued. Why is it okay for us to enslave other parts of the world or to pay 50 cents a week for workers or 50 cents a day for workers in other countries to produce goods and services that we use? There are lots of issues dealing with the kind of unbridled capitalism. And you know, I think it's time for us to celebrate our economic system, but to make sure that there's rules and regulations in place. I'm particularly passionate about poor people. When I was General Secretary of the National Council of Churches, my mantra was to address fear, fundamentalism, and Fox News with a commitment to peace, poverty, and planet Earth. Many of our elected officials talk about the middle class. Very few talk about the poor. Mm-hmm. And I think there are some justice issues that we've got to raise in our society. We're a great nation. We've got to figure out how to use our superpoweredness with humility and how to make a mid-course correction in our economic system so that all people have access to the quality of life in our nation. And that means we got to spend as much money on public education as we do on war. We got to spend more resources on health care and less on a defense system that's based on World War II practicalities.
Thank you, Rosemary, so much for your call. Bob is next from Franklin. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi.
My first question is, many of the people that I talk to don't seem to understand that money is really corrupting the system in Washington. And I'd like to know, how do we get these people informed? And the second question is, who would be the better reformer, McCain or Obama?
Let me answer your second question first.
Okay.
We've got good news in the area of public financing related to both McCain and Obama. McCain is the author of the McCain-Feingold bill that was focused on presidential financing. And he has admitted that that system is broken, but he pledges to fix it. We can't have another presidential campaign where we have tons and tons of money, in this case, $1 billion for a campaign for presidency. It's just abuse of the system, and we need presidential financing put in place. McCain also supported public financing in Arizona and testified for public financing in Connecticut. So I think he will be a friend. Obama is also a friend. Obama is supporting something called the Durbin-Specter bill, which would mandate public financing for House and Senate races. He also has pledged to fix the presidential system that is broken once elected. So I think we've got friends on both sides on that issue. To your first question about the fact that money is corrupting our system, I would say amen, amen, and amen. Money is corrupting the system. And I would like to see us tackle that issue, A, by putting public financing in place every place we can across the nation. But secondly, those who of you who donate to political candidates, send a note with your check that says this check is for your election, not to be given away to other candidates, not to be given to your party. Hmm. There's an unusual thing in the House of Representatives and Senate.
We have about 5 seconds.
In order to be a committee chairman, you've got to raise money for your party. And that's why even safe district candidates raise money to give away to others.
Thank you, Bob, so much for being with us. Enjoy the hour. Bob Edgar, president of Common Cause. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program and on your production. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be with you tomorrow.